Welcome to In the Middle. I'm Joey Block. A lot going on as we are in the midst of holiday season. You're probably trying to get your shopping done, checking off that list, making sure who's been naughty, who's been nice, making sure you get every little thing that your special somebody heart desires. Well, there's also a lot of stuff going on in the news too, and some of it, you know, leading to a bit of conspiracies high in the sky. So you probably have heard a lot about this drone stuff, and particularly how it relates to our state, as well as New York, and even some parts of Pennsylvania. Well, government officials at the state and local level, along with the federal level, are seeking answers as to why mysterious drones are flying all across New Jersey in the night sky. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill held a hearing this week into the matter and couldn't really get to the bottom of it. Then state police held a briefing of their own with New Jersey lawmakers down in Trenton, and many of the attendees were left with more questions than answers. And a lot of them were even criticizing the fact that Governor Murphy was a no-show for that event. And to be clear, Democrats and Republicans are both pretty outraged on this across the board. Now, obviously, Republicans are more annoyed with the fact the governor wasn't there, but both parties are seeking answers here. But in particular, New Jersey 2nd District Republican Congressman Jeff Van Drew even floating the possibility out there that the drones are coming from a mothership launched by Iran off the coast. Now, he has said and clarified over time that he wasn't necessarily saying it was off the east coast of the United States, like right off the Jersey Shore, but did say it could be somewhere in the Atlantic. Well, fellow New Jersey GOP Congressman Chris Smith echoed these claims at a congressional hearing this week, saying between 12 and 30 drones were spotted following a Coast Guard lifeboat off the Jersey Shore Sunday night. Now, both Van Drew and Smith have called for these drones to be shot down. Now, Murphy was kind of doing an ask the governor type of thing, where he's taking some Q&A. And he responded to these calls by saying the state doesn't have the authority to shoot them down, but wouldn't be opposed if the federal government took care of it. On the accusations that these drones are coming from a foreign entity, Murphy says it's just fear-mongering and a wild accusation and a wild assertion. Specifically, in regards to Van Drew, he said, quote, "Come on, man. The Department of Defense said there's zero evidence. I'm not sure what he's watching lately. He might want to watch news," close quote. Overall, the governor says, quote, "Based on everything we know, there is no public safety risk we're aware of." At a White House briefing, national security spokesman John Kirby said, quote, "Upon a review of available imagery, it appears that many of the reported sightings are actually manned aircraft that are being operated lawfully." So that's the claim there from the White House. Now, this comes the same day that Murphy spoke with the White House. He said he was going to do it then, and that is what happened. Specifically about this situation. Now, there have been many reports of drone sightings across military bases in the state, including at the Naval Weapons Station Earl in Colts Neck and the Picatinny Arsenal in Morris County, and even a sighting at President-elect Trump's Bedminster Golf Course. Now, the agency in charge of the skies is the Federal Aviation Agency, and they are reminding everybody that it is illegal to try and shoot these things down for yourself, because That's what you've been hearing a lot of people saying. Oh, I'll just take care of it myself. Well, you might want to refrain from that because the federal government is saying that is their jurisdiction and not yours. Now, this comes on the heels of the FAA administrator, Mike Whitaker, resigning ahead of Trump's inauguration. In a joint statement, the FBI and Homeland Security said they are, quote, in close contact with the New Jersey State Police, continue to relay personal and technology to investigate the situation and confirm whether the reported drone sightings are actually drones or are instead manned aircraft or other inaccurate sightings. So that is the deal there from the FBI. That is what they're saying they're going to do. And of course, that all comes as FBI Director Christopher Wray has resigned or announced plans to resign to allow Trump's pick, Kash Patel, to take over the agency come the start of the new administration. So there are these connections that are being made here, and especially with the drone stuff, because what is something that may have started more as public intrigue is now becoming another political thing. Now, the good part, you might say, is the fact that it's bringing people together, right? That there is this bipartisan agreement here in the Garden State that, oh, wow, we really need to do something together. We need to unify together. But when it comes to certain theories, that's where you might start to leave the mainstream here. And that is the case with Van Drew, where he was making these claims, and then Chris Smith are, and that's where the dispute is now we're seeing, is that they are saying that these have a good shot at being something from Iran or some other foreign entity, and they're being launched into the country based on a mothership that is located in the Atlantic Ocean. Now, again, the law enforcement officials have not confirmed that yet, but again, the Biden administration in the past has come under fire for saying one thing and then it ends up being another. So with the politics, it's a very delicate situation here because you don't really want to make it a political thing when people are generally frustrated about not having an answer what's up there and concerned about what these drones are doing, what information they might be collecting, and everything of that nature. As I'm sure you've heard from friends and family as much as I have, about what's going on up there in the skies. So there are the political problems. One, the standard for Biden is how he now has to try and deal with this on the way out the door with this national security crisis. Because remember, the federal government is saying that it's not one of theirs, even though now there's some reporting maybe they were doing some testing. Of course, that's not been confirmed, that, you know, there was some memo that went out. You got all these whistleblowers out there saying a lot of stuff that people are trying to verify as best as they can. And then the other theory about the foreign adversaries is, well, you know, it didn't come from a foreign entity. So if it didn't come from a foreign entity and it's not a government device, then people are left to go towards conspiracy. And obviously you've probably heard a lot of that online, maybe within your regular life about that. Of course, we don't have any evidence to back that up at this point. If we do, we will certainly bring it here to you. But that's the fine line the politicians have to walk, because maybe they're going to jump the game a little bit, whether it is for political expediency or whether they're really just trying to help their constituents and provide some clarity for them, or really trying to hold the current administration accountable, because everyone seems to be pointing the fingers. I mean, you hear the mayors out there, they're trying to explain stuff to their residents, they're taking the incoming, They're pointing to the state, and then the state's pointing all the way up to the federal government. So at what point does the buck stop? Does it stop with Biden? Does it stop with Murphy? Right now, it seems like that energy is being focused on Biden. But Murphy still is the governor of the state, and if it's specifically happening in New Jersey, now, of course, we have reports that it's been seen now in Staten Island and Brooklyn and even parts of eastern Pennsylvania. And if these things are moving across the East Coast, then maybe it won't be an exclusively a New Jersey problem. But again, that epicenter is still Morris County because that's where the initial spottings were. And now, obviously, it's expanded to cross multiple counties. You see it even going as far as Ocean County now, the sightings, and as far west as Hunterdon County and beyond. So with all that, Murphy is being plagued with questions day after day after day. Now, he doesn't have to run for re-election, so he doesn't necessarily have to worry about that, but the politics still is, hey, I may want to run for president in 4 years. This may not be a good look if I'm seen being a weak leader on this. So let me try and do something on that. And that's probably also why he wanted to tamp down the rhetoric with Jeff Van Drew, because a big part of the bite was like, I don't want fear mongering. Let's all get together and work this out together. He really emphasizing that, trying to make this sound like this is going to be a bipartisan solution. A role of leadership, you could say, for the governor, especially if he's trying to appear presidential as he goes into that. And again, being forced into, okay, this is what the Republicans think and this is what the Democrats think. Now we're on to that, possibly, if that's where everybody wants to go. Now, I'm sure you out there probably don't. You probably just want the answers on what in God's name is it that are flying in the sky. And maybe you've seen one of these drones. Again, and there is the very accusation that now the White House and the Defense Department are saying, and then, again, because the FBI are the ones leading this investigation. That's what we've been told. And they are not having a lot of answers here, as we know. So, for people who are concerned, they might not like that. So, it's all being passed around the blame of who's saying what, and that's could potentially kind of be where the divide is. Where's the information? What news outlet are you watching? Is it going to go back to that again, where Republicans are saying one thing and Democrats are saying another? So, Murphy trying to kind of go back to his COVID thing that worked well politically for him to say, all right, let's try and all come together on this and kind of look in that presidential role when 2028 comes around. So anyways, Murphy is in a bit of a pickle because the longer this goes on, the more questions he's going to be forced to answer. And the more he's going to have to press the White House to give him some answers of something to say. Because a lot of it is, oh, no cause for concern. That's basically how we started the week. And then, still no cause for concern, but we definitely need the federal government to get involved in this. So a lot of a change in tone from Murphy, probably because he's hearing it from a lot of people on both sides of the aisle in regards. And you are seeing the Republicans run with this in their own way because, one, you have them state Republicans criticizing Murphy for not going to this briefing. Then, on the federal level, you have Van Drew and Smith in conflict with Murphy with what exactly this could be. And Van Drew is specifically citing sources within the U.S. federal government that are telling him these things, and he's standing by him, and Smith is standing by his claims, and that could be where the money in the water is. It could be back to, potentially, we could be going back to another bipartisan mudslinging contest where it's two sides of the story, two different realities, two different sources of information. And that, just like the way it was in COVID, we all started believing the same thing. And then when there was some divergence one way or the other, then the whole thing fell apart and no one knew what to believe except what they wanted to believe. So that could play a role in this too. So it's something we will watch in that regard too. But going back to the FBI, because they're the ones who are leading the investigation, that is an entity that's come under scrutiny for a long time now. And you have to look at these resignations that have come down. The FAA and the FBI director both resigning or announcing plans to resign in 1 week. That could be. I mean, the FAA, obviously, they've had a lot of problems with Boeing, and they've had issues with delays over the last few years. So there are regulatory issues there that someone may say, oh, I don't know if this guy should be in charge now. But then again, now everyone's calling on the FAA to do something about these drones, and nowhere to be found. So that could be part of that too. They know what's going down, and they just want to, Whitaker just wants to get out of there. And again, not even the government now trying to back away from the term drone in general. And eyewitnesses claim up and down that these are drones, and they're saying, well, not so fast here. Maybe they're just manned aircrafts. That's kind of a technical difference in terms of the military, because drones are not manned. They are electronically controlled. While an aircraft, especially manned aircraft, as you can imagine, a person is on there, they're operating it. They are directly in the vehicle. So a much different thing there. And then there is the aspect of how the FBI has been handling the investigation. It's been very hush-hush, along with the Defense Department. So if that brings us to Ray, because Ray has obviously come under scrutiny pretty much before all this happened. He was pretty much getting the axe because of the way the Trump investigations were handled, as well as other law enforcement issues. And Ray tried to walk the tightrope. Obviously, Trump was not happy with his performance, so he picked Cash Patel to take over. And Cash Patel is a guy who isn't afraid of pissing a couple people off. He's someone who will go in there, and if he finds out that the government's hiding information or been lackluster in this investigation, he's going to reveal it to you. And some people may not like that. So Cash Patel is a guy who's determined to throw everything up. And if you're Trump, that works for you politically. Now, if you're Biden, you don't. You see how the Democrats are painting Cash Patel. So Cash Patel, again, if you are going into the role and trying to go in the confirmation hearings, it's a walking of the line. But again, given this drone stuff, they may want to, because Cash Patel really hasn't gotten a lot of opposition. So with Cash Patel, conservatives are hoping that he's going to release all this information about the FBI and how it works and how it operates, particularly what they're working on, surveillance operations, any type of stuff like that. So it is quite ironic that Ray would be going out now when there is a major FBI investigation going on. So with that, putting a button on the whole thing here is that these federal agencies are under scrutiny, and the state lawmakers are tired of getting the heat from their constituents. Murphy is tired of hearing it, and they are trying to get those answers out. And will the Biden administration have an answer? Are the congressmen and the senators who are requesting answers? And there are even some people are asking Trump to do something too, because the president-elect will be in office in about a month from now. So they're trying to see if he can do something about it. That's part of it. And also Elon Musk, also a man of the tech, obviously. He was a big part of SpaceX's success. He's the guy who runs the whole thing. Could he develop something like that? That's what some people are asking too. We'll have to watch and see how this drone situation develops and what exactly transpires from that, how all these entities respond, how do you, the people, respond. That is something that we're going to see. Do we get more answers on that? Is there going to be more political headway for these people? Is there going to be a headache along the way if they don't do it? That's something that we will watch and see, and we will bring you any updates on the story as we get them. Now, here's what we're getting in the middle of this week. New Jersey's largest newspaper, the Star Ledger, will cease print editions at the end of next month. The paper instead will be going to an exclusively online format, with the final print edition coming out on January 30th. This brings an end to the Star Ledger's 157-year existence, with the paper citing high costs and low demands as the reason to close shop on the physical front. The end of print editions also means the editorial staff being shown the door. Opinion editor Tom Moran, he's going to be out of the job come February 2nd, along with the rest of the editorial staff. Now, joining me to discuss this is Star Ledger conservative columnist Paul Mulshine. Paul, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
The paper you work for, the Star Ledger, is ending print editions in February. An op-ed you wrote for the newspaper, you said it was not surprising, but you were shocked that the print editions lasted this long. What ultimately led the Star Ledger to make this decision?
You know, the problem is that print is only read by old guys like me. You know, I'm in my 70s. And most of the people I hear from are also old, because that's who reads print. Younger people just go online. And even I, you know, often don't get a chance to read the print version. It costs a lot of money, and you no longer get the advertising. You don't get the circulation revenue. You don't get the advertising revenue. So, yeah, I really was surprised it lasted this long.
In your piece, you talked about how the Washington Post has been facing similar problems that the Star Ledger has. One example you brought up was the owner of the Post, Jeff Bezos, defending the paper's decision not to endorse in the presidential race, despite a number of staffers being upset about the move. Bezos says he is trying to restore credibility to his publication amid a shift toward digital media. You offered this advice to him, quote, "The Post needs an equal number of conservative opinion writers to support the opposite viewpoint," close quote. The Star Ledger has been accused of being too liberal over the years. Given the downward trend in traditional media, would hiring more conservatives be enough to reverse that trend?
Well, let me just say that if it weren't for the fact that I'm a conservative, I probably wouldn't have had a job all these years, you know, because I'm single-handedly holding up the right wing of the newspaper. And so that's been, you know, really good. Actually, a lot of my readers will say, if the coverage was more conservative, we wouldn't be going out of the print business and all that. But I don't think that's true. You know, unfortunately, it's all advertising. When this thing started, look at who was smart. We, in the media, in the print media, all put everything into giving our stuff away for free online that we were selling. And in 1999, say, what, before the Star Ledger went online, we were printing money. We had 300 reporters. They didn't have enough office space. The paper was thick, had lots of ads. And, you know, I remember going to meetings with the editors back then, and they say, oh, this is great. We're going to go online. And, you know, I'd be like, well, you know, wait a minute. We got something we're selling for a lot of money right now, and we're going to give it away, and that's going to work. You know? And back then, people were enchanted by the wonders of the internet. You know, they all said, oh, we'll get the hits. But the hits just don't pay what, you know, what certain cash. I mean, paper, you used to get the circulation money and the ad revenue. And immediately when we went online, it was so easy to steal, for example, the want ads. I mean, want ads cost a lot in the paper, but online you can set up a want ad site for nothing. And you know who was really smart was Drudge, because he just took other people's stories and put headlines on them. And he didn't have to gather the news. I mean, gathering the news is tremendously expensive. But if you just take other people's news and put it in your page, you know, that works great. So it's just, it's a bad system, because people are not going to pay to do the kind of coverage that used to be normal. When I started, I worked for the Toms River paper at the time. And we and the Asbury Park Press competed. We each had a reporter who went to every essentially meeting in the county. And, you know, if I was sitting at the zoning board in Maniloking, the Asbury Park Press guy would be sitting next to me, just right down to really small time stuff. And that is no longer done. There are those hyper local sites, but they don't do what we used to do. We used to just, you know, it used to be a very comprehensive local reporting mechanism, but that's all gone. And, you know, it's been replaced by, you know, let's face it, I guess porn, right? I mean, everybody looks at it on the internet, you know, that's, they say, I forget what the, did you ever hear what the percentages, like, it's something like 50% of the hits are on web porn websites. Because, you know, sometimes you're reading things that are just so boring. I could be looking at some beautiful girl. You know? So it's, we just can't compete in that field.
You bring up the fact that the beginning of the digital era was essentially the beginning of the end for the print era. If the Star Ledger didn't go digital, do you think the print edition would still be something that'd be alive and thriving, or would the entity just be wasting in the wind as a whole?
If everybody at that time had set up a paywall, then we might have been able to survive. But I remember it was funny. There's a guy in Asbury Park who ran a popular weekly there. And that was a good advertising venue, because, you know, Asbury Park, there's a lot of visitors, and advertising in the local newspaper is a good way to reach them. And the Wall Street Journal actually, and he refused to set up. Everybody was telling him, go online. And he said no. And the Wall Street Journal did a feature, front page feature on him. And he just said, I'm not going to go online and give it away. I've got all these people who pay for it. So if everybody had done that, we could have done much better. But like I said, there was this giddiness about the wonders of the internet that just took everybody over back then. And then if you didn't have a paywall, you know, I mean, you go online and say you see something from like the Dallas Morning News. And if they've got a paywall, you're like, well, I'm not going to pay $10 to read one article, you know? So you just avoid, you can get around the paywalls, you know, but yeah, it's just really a tough market. And I don't see how we're ever going to get, you know, we'll never regain competitiveness, and it's something else will, I guess, come along. It'll be even worse.
You've talked about how it takes a lot of money to fund a true news gathering organization, but as you brought up, there are sites like Drudge. There's also podcasters like Joe Rogan, radio hosts like Charlemagne the God, who, you know, they don't really have what you'd say are the traditional resources and are part of the quote unquote mainstream media, but yet these guys are getting millions of followers and listeners every week, month, etc. Does the traditional news gathering thing, is it kind of a thing of the past? Do people care for that anymore? Or are people more in tune with personalities and, you know, getting their news from digital sources, things that people haven't thought about in the past?
Yeah, people just don't, they want it, but they don't want to pay for it. And you can, these guys like Charlemagne the God, they're like Drudge. I mean, you just, you pick everyone else's work. And in fact, my daughter used to work for Newsweek, and, you know, they would basically give them an assignment. She started as a writer, which she liked, but then they made her an editor. And she basically would just have to find, oh, and she was in charge of like seven reporters, and each reporter had to find some quirky thing on the internet and write a witty, you know, sort of catchy summation. But they're not, Newsweek, they may be paying a handful of people to actually go out and report, but mostly people cannibalize other people's reporting.
Now that the Star Ledger is coming to an end, along with most of the print media in this state, what does the future hold for local journalism in New Jersey?
Well, there's always going to be these patch websites, you know, and the Star Ledger will still be online. So that, you know, that will still be there. And I think you're going to have to pay $10. It's not an awful deal. For $10, you'll get access to every day's newspaper. You know, the problem is a lot of people are reading it on their phone. And, you know how it is when you're reading something on your phone. It's like these tiny little letters and, you know, you can't figure it out. And if you're doing it on your home computer, you can get a good layout. Even then, though, it's not as good as paper in your hand, you know. So that's a real problem. You just, the phone, and also the phone doesn't have room for many ads. You know, when you read a newspaper and you're flipping through, if you see the ShopRite ad, you go, you know, how much is London Broil selling for? You might go through it, past it, and you'll go, oh yeah, I'll go buy some London Broil. But you'll pass that stuff, and you'll only read it when it's fun for you. With online, you just get a tiny little picture and little text. You know, it's a fairly awful experience. It's work. You know, with me, I don't mind going online for work and picking up things, references I need for my writing. But it's not fun. You know, it's just, it gets really tedious. You're going to all these websites and moving these blocks of type around. And, you know, sometimes you got this block of type, you think you're moving a concrete block. It's so heavy. And you have to constantly refine everything and bring it up to the moment. And it's, you know, it's no fun for the reader, and it's no fun for the editor or the writer.
Let's talk about you specifically. You're going to be on the payroll until February 2nd. What do you plan on doing after that?
I would tell everybody I'm going to go back to my prior career. I was a porn star in Europe. That's something that, when we were out sailing, we met this guy who had a giant boat, and he had these beautiful girls on it. And he actually came to me, and he needed a ride out to his boat. It was so big. And he actually said to me, I'm a porn star in Europe. This is my B-list. And I just thought that was the coolest line ever. You know, I was thinking, I'll make that a screenplay. You know, I was a porn star in Europe. It was funny because when people would ask you that, you know, when I didn't want to retire, it's a little insulting, you know. So you could shut them up that way. But, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. Probably I hope to spend more time surfing. I wish I had a little pad in Hawaii, as the Beach Boys song goes. You know, but it'll be nice. Like I said, it's not the fun it used to be because you're constantly, you feel like a technician instead of a writer. You're just always moving stuff, you know? I mean, I don't know what we did. In the old days, you'd sit down and put a piece of paper in the typewriter and you'd have to recall what you could recall and you'd write something and and that was that. But now you just have to check it against this and check it against that and just, you know. So it's pretty hard work. It's pretty tedious. And it wasn't that way when I came in.
So it's safe to say retirement is in your future?
Not entirely retirement. I'd like to do some writing on the side. Just, you know, not under deadline pressure, you know.
I want to shift gears here and talk about the political environment in the state. The Cook Political Report has come out with its initial prediction for the governor's race here in New Jersey, and they rate it as lean Democrat. Despite saying the call is, quote, clear as the Hudson River, the report does caution that the race, quote, is more closely resembling the Wild West than the white-collar Northeast, close quote. Basically, they say it largely depends on who the Republicans pick as their nominees and if Democrats are able to turn out their traditional voting bloc. What do you ultimately believe is going to be the deciding factor in this race?
Well, Republicans, for some reason, Republicans can't win a U.S. Senate race. We saw that again, you know, last month. But they can win. I think it's in the time I've worked on the newspaper since Brendan Byrne was governor, the Republicans actually won more gubernatorial races than the Democrats. If you say go back to Tom Kaine beating Florio, people will pick up, will vote Republican for governor. And, you know, Schiaparelli shocked everybody last time by coming within, I think, 4 points, even though he didn't have a lot of money in the, you know, and everybody was thought he had no chance. So if the Republicans put up a good, the Republicans, you know, step on their own feet all the time, though, because there are so many great issues. You know, the Democratic Party in this state basically exists to give jobs to public employees in public unions that contribute to the Democratic Party. That's it. You know, there's not a secondary cause for the existence of it. And if people knew that, they would vote Republican, unless, of course, they're employed by a public employee union. You've got to get that across. I mean, why are our property taxes so high? Well, simply because the teachers union has a stranglehold on our wallets. We get this. I mean, when I was a young reporter with Tom Kaine and Brendan Byrne, Brendan Byrne brought in the income tax and said, this is the cure for the property tax problem. We'll bring in an income tax and that'll be used to support local schools and so forth. Well, they brought it in, they raised it, and they raised it again. They raised it again. Property taxes kept going up. And if you look at it like NORC schools, right, everything in the Democratic machine gets all the pork. Like the NORC schools get more than $1 billion a year in state aid that comes from the income tax. There are entire states that don't give out $1 billion in education aid. You know, my town and your town get practically nothing. You know, I live in Ocean County, and the towns here get maybe 5% of their tax bill in state aid and, you know, 95% property tax. Why the Republicans can't capitalize that is a mystery to me. They're afraid to come. They're always afraid to say, you know, NORC does not deserve, you know, NORC maybe deserves twice as much as my local town, but it doesn't deserve 50 times as much, which is what, you know, that's the situation. But they won't come out with that. They always get stuck, and they fail to point out that the Democrats are just a machine to move money from North Jersey, from the shore and the suburbs, into the cities. That's all the Democrats do. And, you know, and they Republicans have failed to make that case.
A number of candidates have already jumped into the race, but some are still deciding whether to dip their toe into the water. Conservative podcaster and former congressional candidate Mike Crispy has launched an exploratory committee to look into a possible run for governor. He says there's no one else who's running right now that's more MAGA than him. He notably was a delegate for President-elect Trump at the Republican National Convention over the summer and personally collected signatures for him to get on the ballot this fall. How could Crispy's candidacy shake up the race if he does indeed decide to jump into this thing?
Probably won't have any effect. You know, what's Spady has already, you know, made an appeal to, you know, the radio host Bill Spadia has made an appeal to the Trump. A lot of people are going to be saying they're the Trump person, but, you know, that works for Trump. It doesn't work for anybody else. You got to have more than that. And so, I mean, good luck to him if he tries it, but that's, at least it'll be good. At least everybody will be forced to the right to try and make some arguments to win. But they're not very good at it.
Now, the state assembly is also on the ballot next year. With Trump's shockingly better than expected performance comes potential opportunities for GOP pickups. The president-elect won in the 3rd legislative district down south, along with the 36th and 38th in Bergen County. He even came close to winning the 19th legislative district, which is the home of Assembly Speaker Craig Coughlin. Now, Republicans haven't controlled the lower chamber since 2001. Do they really have a shot at changing that come next year?
No, I would say no. It's too tough. You know, I mean, I don't think that the Trump holdover effect is going to do much to help them. And I've watched them fail miserably so many times. You know, I've never seen them succeed. I guess Chris Christie was the closest thing to a success, but that was a personal success for Chris Christie. You know, not a success for the party. In fact, he went to great lengths to position himself away from the party. So it's been hard for the Republicans. They really need somebody to have a great message and get across to people that they're getting screwed. But I think what the problem is, you know, when people's taxes get too high, they move to Florida. You know, if they can afford it, they move to Florida where there's no income tax. And so not around to oppose this anymore. But it's a very tough task. And, you know, I thought Jack Cittarelli did pretty good last time. And it depends who the Democrats put up. Right now, they got a really lackluster field. You know, Fuller, you know, the Jersey City mayor, he's going to jump in. It's just not an inspiring field, you know, but generally that's where the Republicans might have a shot.
Before we go here, just real quick, Harris carried the 14th and the 16th legislative districts by double digits, which have long been thought by Republicans as competitive areas. Given the newer opportunities opening up in other parts of the state, can we expect to see resources move away from those districts and more towards places that could actually be competitive?
I don't know. It's a very, you know, the Republicans need to define themselves as a suburban party that's actively fighting the cities. Because, you know, the cities are just, as I said, a fundraising mechanism for the Democrats. They're afraid to do that. You know, they're always afraid. I mean, I don't know how many times I've heard a Republican say, well, I can't really argue about state aid because they'll call me a racist. And in fact, Sheila Oliver, the late Sheila Oliver, when she was lieutenant governor, in her debate, she said even bringing up property taxes is racist. And our politicians are so gutless that they won't stand up to that kind of thing.
Yeah, we'll have to see where the race goes for the assembly as well as the governor's race and see what issues pop up there. Star Ledger conservative columnist Paul Mulshine, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. That was fun.
Well, that about does it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me as always. To stay in touch with what's going on with the show, all you have to do is follow me on social media, which you can do on X at @Block_Joey. Again, my last name is spelled BLOCH_Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram at joey.block.39. Again, that is at joey.block.39. Now, in case you just found the show, you love it, you think it's great, but where do you find it? Well, here's what you need to do. You got to go to that browser of yours. You have to type in foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. Again, that is foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. You put that in, it'll take you right to the Fox Sports New Jersey podcast page. You're going to scroll down till you find in the middle with Joey Block. You're going to click on that and all the episodes will be there. You'll see the newest one at the top and the older ones at the bottom. We typically put out new episodes every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It has been a pleasure. We'll be back next week with our special A Year in Review series. I love this series. It's really fun. I love doing it. We're going to go through the top 10 stories of the year. I'm going to have my top 10, and then I'm going to ask a panel, and there'll be some familiar faces. You'll have to tune in to find out who they're going to be, but they are going to break down what they think are the top stories of the year, as well as, you know, maybe the weirdest, strangest, most outlandish ones are. That's all coming up next week, right here on Fox Sports New Jersey.